Hey everyone, this is Tony Holbein. You are listening to The Revenue Brothers with Raul and Tony. In today's episode, we are debating MEDDIC. Is it the magic sales framework everyone claims it to be? Or should you ditch it for a more custom framework instead? Enjoy! Welcome back, everyone. Guess where Raul is sitting right now? Raul, where are you sitting?
I'm actually sitting in a hotel room, which is not that exciting, but more interestingly, maybe in Bangkok right now, which I'll be calling my home for the foreseeable future. We just talked about it. Lots of exciting stuff happening here, especially in the VC and startup sphere.
Shocker, shocker news. Raul is now migrating to Bangkok. Will we eventually see you back here on the home front, or is it, yes. You know, what's the plan?
Yes. I'll be spending a couple months here for sure. I've been here for a week. I'm already quite interested and invested in what's happening here in some startups and VC. It's Wild West still. Maybe we can talk about that in a different episode. But no, yeah. Like Berlin is my base and it's my love right now. I'll be staying there.
There you go. Nice.
For better or worse, you'll be having me back.
Yeah. Okay. So we're not going to be talking about Bangkok, Thailand, or Asia, East Asia right now. We're going to be talking about, what are we going to talk about, Raul?
So we thought it's about time we talk about another corner cure since, yeah. This was one of the things that is always very snappy and we can find a little bit to talk about. And one of the things that I've been seeing popping up lately is, I would say, sales frameworks in general, but specifically MEDDIC. Mm-hmm. And so I thought today we would make it MEDDIC corner cure.
Yes. So for everyone who isn't part of the initiated here, so MEDDIC, you know, let me just quickly go. So this is an acronym. Obviously, each letter stands for something else. And it's really, you know, meant to be both a qualification framework for a deal, for an opportunity, for a sales process, and also a bit, you know, helping you figure out, you know, what the next step might be and so forth, right? And those, what is it, six letters stand for M is the metric that you're influencing, right? Kind of, is your product, is what your service, what is that? What is it benefiting in the business, right? Are you improving sales cycles? Are you improving ACVs? Are you reducing costs? Are you increasing revenues, whatever it might be, right? That's the M. The E stands for, and they're not in a neat order. They're more like so you can pronounce it. So kind of don't get, you know, mix them. E is for the economic buyer. Is the economic buyer actually identified? Yeah. Then you have two Ds. One D is what is the decision-making process? So, you know, who's involved, what do you need to know, blah, blah, blah. The other D is for the decision-making criteria. That's different from the metric. The metric is what you're impacting, but the criteria could include how burdensome is the implementation, you know, how do the other competitors look like and how do you compare and so forth, right? That's the criteria basically you need to fulfill. Then we're getting to the I. The I is either identify or implicate pain. So this is kind of connected to the metric, honestly. The pain is like the surface level stuff, and then the metric is almost the cure, what's coming out of this. And then we're going to see which is the champion. Like, do you have a champion identified that can work for you on the other side? There's a new additional letter that some people include. It's the P, so MET pick. And the P simply stands for a paper, the paper process, meaning you know, legal, procurement, and so forth. So everything that really only happens once you're the vendor of choice, so to speak. And then, okay, let's go from vendor of choice to signature. That's where the P basically is coming from, right?
There's also one more C, competition. So they also sometimes add that as well because there is two C's in the end.
Oh, that's right. So it's even more letters, right? So where is this coming from, actually? Kind of, do you have the background story for this?
So a short story. I'm not sure that comes directly from him, but this has been credited to John McMahon, who is also the author of The Qualified Sales Leader, quite widely read book right now. And he is mostly known for being sort of the godfather of this approach to account executive work. He mentored a lot of CROs nowadays that are walking around in Europe, especially, but also in the US. And he was and built up the commercial practice at Snowflake and a couple other companies. I think also MongoDB, if I'm not mistaken, but I think most notoriously known for Snowflake and sort of like being very ruthless about introducing this there. And it was sort of a little bit his counter approach to just working with budget authority, need and time. and also getting a bit more, we can talk about what it will bring. But that's where that came from. I think it's, even right now, it's already quite a bit old. But let's think about if it's outdated or if it's still worth talking about it.
Yeah, shortly banned. Again, you said it, budget, authority, need, and timing. It's invented by IBM, I think. I'm not sure who there, but kind of that's how old it is. And basically, Matic is kind of the new version of banned. And then there's differences, and you know, one is qualification, blah. I don't want to like that. I get everyone confused around this, but it's sales stuff, right? So when you kind of come across this, when are people most likely to start thinking about, oh, I think we need to implement Matic here? What's usually the pain that you're seeing that people are coming across?
So I think importantly, how this differentiates itself from maybe other frameworks is you use it typically at a different point in time. You probably don't start using Matic right away when you get a cold lead through some sign of, I don't know, like an MQL through a web sign up or whatever. But this is typically for further down the process. And the problems that you have further down the process are especially, and if you read The Qualified Sales Leader, this is basically what he starts out with his book with. There's so much happening in a deal that it's hard to grasp exactly sort of the criteria that correlate with a deal going well or not. And so what you can have is, if you're a salesperson and I'm sort of your revenue leader, I'll be asking you, like, hey, Tony, how's the deal going? And then for week after week, month after month, you'll be telling me it's great. They're getting back to me, right? And so this is sort of an approach to bringing a bit more, not just a bit, but a lot more, I would say, stringency to a process that can be very soft. And I have seen this. And I have seen this in companies when you walk around the sales floor and you ask people, how is this big deal coming along? And you hear the same answer every single week. It's fine.
And so I think one of the telltale signs that you might need something like, whether it's Matic or one of the other 200 versions of this, it's when the only way you're talking with your reps about deals about next steps. What is the next step, right? Ah, okay, you kind of talk to this person. Next step is what? Is the next step signature? No. Okay, what's then the next step, you know, then there? And what Matic kind of provides you is, it's kind of a little bit of a map, actually, kind of, hey, you know, you need to check all of those boxes. And if you don't, you're probably not in control, or you're missing something really important, right? Kind of it might give you a hint that if you do not know what the decision-making criteria are, for example, that means you can't rig it in your favor and kind of either help change those decision-making criteria or really sell into those specific criteria that you know, person chose, right? And usually if you're not in control or don't know those decision criteria, probably your competitor is, by the way, right? Kind of, and that's kind of the problem, right? Kind of, if you don't know all of these things, chances are that you're relying on luck, trying to get lucky, or that someone else is basically kind of currently outmaneuvering you on this account.
Yeah.
Now that we have kind of talked a lot about, you know, what it actually is, and we've been educating people for 8 minutes now, con or cure?
So this might be very controversial, but I think it's actually a con, or at least it is going to be a con quite soon. And this has been very maybe motivated by, I think, what is happening and what will happen very soon. And I'll just, very, very quick story. So one of the last companies that I've come in contact with are a wonderful example of how maybe you don't even need Matic nowadays anymore with the capabilities that the tools that we have and maybe even AI give us. And so basically his founder, what he did is he said, okay, we have the same problem. We need to be able to have educated discussions about what is a good deal and what's not a good deal and what's going to happen, what's not going to happen. He didn't know about Matic. And so what he did was he basically built his own tool and his own analytics to understand which events and which kind of factors correlate with accounts that close and which ones that don't. To some extent, if you want, building sort of his own Einstein on ChatGPT. And he came up with something that I don't even know if he has an acronym, but with sort of a list of things that satisfies the same thing that Matic does, but does so specifically for his company. And the work that he did, and that blew my mind. I met this guy 2 weeks ago. That work was about a day of work. So that is the crazy part. So basically he said, okay, he was not a very educated founder. He didn't know about Matic. He just asked himself the same question, and he answered that question with the tools that he had to an even much better degree than Matic. and yeah. they now have their own framework to answer these questions.
Okay, so, and I'm not quite sure where I'm going to fall between con and cure, but what I fundamentally believe, whether or not that founder stumbled upon the same thing or not, but it's a sales process is very similar across every time you sell something. There might be kind of things are shorter, things can be skipped, things need to be kind of worked out, things take longer. But the fundamental, you know, stepping stones of, you know, getting to, okay, you have a problem, you know, why is that problem exist? I can help you. Who else needs to be part of making that decision? I think those steps are just universal, actually. And you can get to the same outcome by running through all of your deals, asking ChatGPT, hey, what are the steps here? And ChatGPT is probably going to return with, you know, depending on the data, with the same universal steps that sit behind it. Whether or not that is then, you know, Medic or Bent or MedPick or whatever, or your own ChatGPT, it kind of doesn't matter. I think a sales process in general is kind of the same. And I think the good thing that, you know, those frameworks, you know, provide is a very easy checklist for your sales team to just be a good salesperson. Actually, kind of that's, I think, what it is, right? And there's lots of skill in following Medic. By the way, you know, if you're me, I'm a bad salesperson. I kind of follow it and kind of I remember I need to ask that question. Ah, shit, I don't know about this. So I'm not controlling the deal. And then you have, I mean, Spiced is the other thing from Winning by Design, right? Kind of it's the same. I don't know what those acronyms letters stand for, but it's the same theory, the same thing actually. And if you execute this extremely well, I think you can increase your chances of, you know, getting this deal from A to B while being in control and potentially having more strength in forecasting it than just you're like, oh, you know what? This deal isn't going well. You know, he didn't reply to my last email, right? Kind of that's the alternative that you basically have. So I think where I'm falling here is I'm falling a little bit more on the cure side. Not that Medic itself is the cure, but finding a structured way to help your random Joe sales rep follow a good sales process, I think that's good. Whether you kind of take an off-the-shelf framework like Matic or Spiced or Band, or you build your own ChatGPT version of it, I almost don't care about it.
I would agree with everything you said, except that I think there is an advantage to building your own version. I maybe wouldn't have said this 5 years ago because I used to be a fan of these frameworks. And they have their merits still, of course. And you don't always want to put in the work to do that, especially maybe in the beginning. But the cost of coming up with your own version nowadays is so low even just being 10% better than something off the shelf, like if you can get there in a day, you're like, okay, I can get like a 10% pickup improvement rate over there. If you look at, I don't know if that was the start of the craze of acronyms and everything, but where do these all come from? They come from the fact that all commercial leaders ask themselves the same question or a bunch of questions eventually, and they needed an answer. And coming up with their own analysis and their own answers for those in a data-driven way was very, very difficult. And one of the first guys, by the way, still to this day, my favorite sales book ever. I don't know what yours is, but mine is Spin Selling by Neil Rackham. His acronym was SPIN, right? Situation, problem, implication, need, payoff. And what he did was he was one of the first guys to sort of employ a scientific approach to what is good sales. And so what they did was they basically listened to thousands of sales calls. I think they actually did so manually, which is crazy. I think that was 25, 30 years ago. And then they said, okay, what correlates with good B2B sales and what doesn't? And they put that into a framework, right? That is the world that we came from. Nowadays, you can do that basically with the history of your phone calls or the history of the deals that you have and do that analysis in a day, right? And so that's where that sentiment comes from, that maybe nowadays we don't need to have these frameworks anymore when you can just come up with your own version of it in a day.
Yeah. So I think every framework is always only like, what is it, 80, 90% of the way or something like this, right? Kind of you always need to adjust it a little bit to you. There are some theoretical issues with this. Hey, let's just throw it into ChatGPT, right? I mean, just to point it out, number one, you need to have the databases for that, right? You need to have enough data for something kind of to make sense here. And number two, if you have a structural problem in the way you're currently selling, ChatGPT will not actually be able to figure this out, right? They will show you what is the best path of what you're currently taking while not considering that you're actually missing something over. I mean, actually, ChatGPT is a fantastic summary tool, by the way. I think that's what kind of all of this is about, right? And if you're summarizing something that's already, that's wrong and that's broken, then you will kind of get a summary version of that, right? So I think kind of you probably would want to combine those two things, and maybe you want to, you can probably ask, and maybe now this is kind of then starts to become silly, but you can probably say like, hey, ChatGPT, please analyze all of my calls for, you know, medic. And then it probably will do that. And they're like, oh, and here's something missing, right? But the, you know, going one step further here. So, I agree with you that some of that hard work of figuring out, you know, what works for you and what doesn't, that is now much, much simpler and easier. Balancing this out with, hey, not we don't always need to reinvent the wheel all the time, right? Kind of is also pretty important here. If we can take a shortcut, why don't we fucking take a shortcut here? But the other thing that I'm seeing a lot is, and then this goes into my general go-to-market full funnel rant, actually, which is, oh, we're not hitting target. Our forecast is not good enough. It must be our sales reps, right? Our sales reps are the problem here. So let's, oh, we used Bunt yesterday. Let's use Medic today. Let's use Spice tomorrow. Let's try all of that stuff, focusing only on the salespeople in order to improve them while kind of neglecting what happens before that and what happens afterwards, right? And I think in those cases, Medic becomes a con, right? You maybe have an okay sales process in place. Maybe not all of your sales reps and sales leaders are idiots. Maybe they know not Medic or Spice, but after 10, 15 years of selling, they figured out, you know, their own little ChatGPT and, you know how to kind of do it. And then giving them that additional framework is probably not going to fundamentally change things, actually, right? And instead of focusing again on this middle part of the bow tie, with yet another framework from, you know, maybe Winning by Design this time, you know, try and figure out what else in your bow tie or in your funnel is actually going wrong and kind of figure out what's, you know, what you can do there, right? And this is kind of, just to kind of rephrase this again, sometimes I see a Medic implementation just being a symptom of something is not going well in your overall funnel. And the only idea that you can come up with is like, must be the salespeople. You know, can't be anything, must be the salespeople, because that's the only thing that generates revenue. So it has to be those. And that's just wrong.
Yeah. Okay. This I would 100% agree with. And maybe put it my way, because I've seen that also, right? If you already have, this is important. Let's say you already have well implemented and to some degree also followed Medic. Mm. Switching from Medic to Spice is not going to make you 100% more successful, or yeah, it's not going to provide you a big lift, right? Mm-hmm. However, going from no framework, or in theory a framework but nobody's actually following it, yeah, to something that is actually used, maybe even something else that's actually used, this, yeah, I've seen work really well, because I have seen, yes, some frameworks were just not a good fit with some companies, mm-hmm, and they had to switch because people wouldn't get it, it wouldn't make sense, it wasn't the thing for their industry, and so then they switched to another one or built their own that actually was being followed, and that was the big pickup.
Yeah.
So I would agree with that aspect, right? Any framework, even if it's your own framework, that is actually being used and followed correctly is much better than anything else.
So we had Kevin Dorsey on the show, kind of on the revenue formula. And I was asking about script. Maybe I told this, I feel like an old man by now. Maybe I told the story here already.
We are old man, Tony.
Yeah, that's true. Asked him about, hey, sales scripts, you know, is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? And he was like, well, it's a good thing. And I'm like, okay, well, in Europe, because, you know, we're in Europe, people hate it. They say it makes them sound robotic. And it was just so hilarious. He then kind of pauses, looks at me and says like, Tony, have you ever been to the movies? And I just could see where he was going with this. And I was like defeated, you know, outright. It's like, you know, these people there, these actors, you know, they're using a script. They're not coming up randomly with those dialogues that make them sound human. They're using a script and they sound fucking fantastic. Taylor Swift, when she goes on the next concert and she sings the same song that she's been singing for 500 times, are people complaining that she's reading off a script there? Or is she just really good at delivering that script, right? So number one story here, what am I trying to say with this? Well, the more structure you can give people, and this is a people problem, the better, right? Medic is an overarching structure from opportunity creation to opportunity close one. A script is an overarching structure for your demo or for your discovery call or for your what have you, whatever it might be. Those structures, you can fluctuate in how stringent you want to be. And it's like, this has to be done exactly like this, or you give some room. But if you do not have the structure, number one, it will take longer for your sales reps or for human beings in general to learn something new. It will just take longer, period. That's just what it is, because they kind of need to figure out themselves, and many of them won't. So give them a structure. And number two, once there's a structure, you can actually coach them and teach them, right? Instead of saying like, oh, you know, I think your tone of voice on that call, I think you need to work on this a little bit. And you said this word, which I don't think was good. When you have a structure, you can say, okay, out of the framework, you hit these and these and these perfectly, but you didn't go here. Why didn't you not, you know, why did you not go here, right? This might actually be what's, you know, causing friction for you. And suddenly you can do structured teaching and coaching coming with it. And the same structure then applies to the overall deal process, which then, you know, Medic is MedPick or whatever, Spiced. It's just one structure you can follow, right? And I think if you detach yourself from the acronyms and you attach yourself to what we really need is a structure that I can deploy to those people so they are learning faster and I can coach them in a much more valuable way, I think then we are safely in cure world, I think. That's, I think, okay. how I'm kind of getting there.
And one anecdote also comes to mind beside me agreeing with that last aspect. So I was very lucky to have my first mentor. I think I don't talk about him enough here, Manoj Sarasgama. He was one of the best commercial leaders that I've ever seen. And I worked with him in two companies. Lastly, he worked with a company that was Join, very, very big in Berlin, like an HR recruiting software. Mm. And one thing that he always did is I don't know if he was big on frameworks. I don't know exactly, but he was forcing his own frameworks by always employing sort of a follow the best in class approach. Mm. And so basically what he was doing is he was saying, okay, we're going to do what Tony said, but rather than me as a commercial leader and inputting a Medic framework on everyone, I'm going to work with the best people at individual things and parts of the funnel and showcase what they do and make everyone else copy that. And yeah. So I was a RevOps person at the time. I always had to come up with who's the best at what they're doing right now at this part of the funnel, who's the best at qualifying, who's the best at this, who's producing the most leads, and then figuring out what they're doing, put that into a framework with them and have that person teach it to the others.
Yes.
That worked so well because like you don't come from a point of theory, but everyone's like, hey, I want to close like this guy and he's going to tell you and teach you how he does it. That was wonderful.
So sorry that I again need to refer to KD because he's like, I think he's a thought leader, globally genius level stuff on this. He calls it what good looks like. Basically. Mm-hmm. So he implores his directors, everyone in the organization to find outlier performances and then dig into this. For example, he had one lady, she consistently closed 30% higher ACVs consistently. And, you know, they dug into it. It's like, is she having worse conversion rate because maybe she's just squeezing it? Is she, you know, is something else going wrong? Or is she really doing the higher ACVs? Okay, if that's true, actually, what is she doing differently than the other people? And in that specific case, it was actually that instead of her presenting a proposal line item by line item, she presented a proposal just in a package deal. And then kind of in the bottom, like, you know, put in the number that she could kind of achieve, right? So what did they do? So this was the what good looks like. They figured it out. They started copying it. And then basically they started to teach it to the rest of the organization. And we're talking 60 to 80 reps. Yeah, 60 to 80 reps. So it was a big team. It's like a bit of an SMB operation also. What they were achieving by implementing that change across other 60 reps was an 18% lift in ACV across the whole board, which is just
that is wild.
Absolutely insane. So with this amount of reps, you're talking millions of dollars that you're growing now more without having spent a single dime on actually achieving it, right?
In what time frame?
Like in a quarter, right? It's a quarter, basically.
That's wild.
And it might have even been less because it's such a simple trick to kind of execute, right? Instead of line item by line item in your proposal, you just say, hey, it's a package deal. That's what you get. So pretty insane. And basically what you just said there and what he is doing is just a great example. That's what can drive a lot of performance. Scan your funnel for what actually works, you know, figure out what the reason is for it to work, and then include it into your structure, into your process, right? But again, it brings me back to, and this is maybe you and my sales ops, rev ops brain that kind of is still, you know, pulsing sometimes. I think you need to have the structure first before you can implement these things, right? If you have, you know, maybe with a proposal presentation, it kind of maybe works out, but, you know, otherwise, extremely difficult to say, this is why it works. And now everyone in this part of the process, in this part of the structure, you're now, instead of saying A, you're going to say B now. Impossible if you don't have the structure in place. You just simply cannot do it, right?
Okay, this is absolutely perfect, what you just said, because... And I didn't even think about that. What we said was very, very dangerous. And I can come up with a couple of examples where people did not have a good structure in place. Mm. And they did come up with that term of, hey, let me look at what the best person does and then teach it to the others. But because they did, for example, they didn't have a revenue formula in place. So the example you just gave was, okay, there's a person doing 30% more ACV. Is she, does she have a lower conversion rate? Does she maybe have a longer sales cycle or whatever?
Yeah.
Now, those people were able to do that. I've seen companies who did not have a revenue engine, revenue formula type of thing in place. Mm. And they were going a lot by gut feel and then rolling out sort of like sympathy, bias, gut feel to the entire team.
Yes.
And that can backfire incredibly. Like,
yes.
And even in one case, I'm telling you, I was shocked, but I could not find a way to incentivize that guy to not do that. There was a sales leader. He went to a demo with one person. In my opinion, that demo was not very well held by that person at all. However, it closed. The revenue leader was very impressed by that closing because it was a good closing. And the week after that, he started the training to teach everyone to do it that way, which in my opinion was not a good way at all.
Yeah.
But there was no data underlying that. There was just, oh, I was part of that meeting randomly of the 20 meetings happening that week.
Yeah.
I happened to like that one. That one happened to be successful. Now we're going to teach everyone. Now that is really bad leadership in my experience.
It's, you know, it's dangerous, but also the reality is also some teams just don't have so much data where they can run an analysis and, you know, sample size and stuff. So you sometimes have to go a little bit with your gut and your, not instincts, but hey, this makes sense why this worked, right? I think this is one thing. And just kind of as an example, you know, in addition to what you just said there, we had one guy, I love him. He's a fantastic guy. But he has been consistently getting more opportunities than the rest. Like it was just part of the setup. For some reason, that's just how it happened. And we're talking like 50 to 60% more, right? And guess what? He consistently hit his targets and everyone was like, wow, what a rainmaker. Kind of, we can really, you know, bank on him and everything. And I did the math and basically kind of said like, well, with those inputs and with, you know, what everyone else is achieving in terms of conversion rate, sales cycles, ACV, we should have actually seen this outcome here in terms of, you know, revenue. And he was like 30% behind that. So yes, he hit the quota target and beyond, but I actually got supply to a degree where he actually should have been going much further than he did in the end, right? So it's like, it's really important to peel back the onion a little bit on those things before you kind of jump in and say like, you are good, you're bad. That can be detached from a commission check, by the way, but it's just dangerous to use it as an insight to then, you know, teach other people.
Just adding that quickly, little known tip. Very early in my career, I was responsible for distributing leads once. And I did that for a couple months and I got so frustrated and annoyed by it that I had to come up with some way of hacking that thing. And the hack I came up with at the time, now I know others do that as well, is I assigned potentials to every lead. And so basically what I was trying to do is I was distributing leads by potential and then sort of like doing that in a fair way. And then later on, what we did was we didn't just measure outcomes of leads, but we also measured sort of realized potential of the funnel that you were given, which is basically one way to counteract what you just said, which is, oh, one guy just randomly received everything and the other didn't receive anything. And so that is one way that I thought was really nice, is like thinking not just in revenue, not just in conversion rate, but also in realized potential of a funnel.
It makes a ton of sense. Raul, thank you so much. I mean, we talked about Matic in the beginning and then we went into just general sales stuff, which I think is pretty fun also. I think used in the right way, and you know, it's so boring. We're always coming up with this kind of conclusion. Used in the right way, RevOps is a cure. Used in the right way, Matic is the cure. And I think we're kind of landing in the same thing again, right? Kind of if you use it for structure, I think it's good. If you're using it because you're desperate what else to do and it's always the sales team, I think it's probably not going to work out.
You know what? Let me stand on it's a con for now.
Yeah.
For once in a while, let me say, no, it's a con. You should do it your own way. And then at least we have that going for us right now.
Let's do that. Raul, thanks.
Cool.
Thanks a lot for
the
session.
Tony.
And thanks everyone else for listening. Have a good one. Bye-bye.